It's the weekend, and you have financial questions that need answering. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Jill on Money, the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. We are delighted that you are with us today. It is always a good day when I can do a radio show. So much fun. And it's a great day when I can hear from all of you. The ones who have financial questions. Mark, did you ever hear about the statistic that only 10% of the people listening call or write? Is it 10%? That actually seemed high. I think it's 3%. Yeah, I think it's 3%. So maybe only 3% of you actually pick up the phone and say you want financial advice. But I bet more of you would like advice that's really about you. And it's radio, guys. You know, you can be anonymous. Use a different name. Tell us you're, pretend you're from somewhere else. Don't worry. We'll help hide your real identity. We don't care about your identity. We care about your story. So if you'd like to share your story or your financial concern with us, please give us a holler. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. 855-411-JILL. And you can also send us an email. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. So we like to start the show with calls. And that's so much fun for me. We get to start with Jennifer from Georgia. Welcome, Jennifer. How can I help you?
Well, I have a silly question, and I hesitated calling.
Why? Come on. I'm a nice girl. I'm not going to make you feel silly.
You guys are so much more educated, but I thought somebody else out there had to have the same question. I have stumbled across news radio over the last couple of years, which my husband teases me means I'm getting older, although I think I'm still 18.
Uh-huh, I know. You know, you get to that moment where you're like, oh, wait a minute, I'm in the demo for the oldie station now.
Yes.
That's not fun.
Yes.
But yes. I do like the music. It's okay.
So as I've been listening to your show and then over the last couple of years, a lot of other financial advising shows and getting a sense of all the different ones and one's telling you why this one's great and that one's not, you sort of get an idea. But all it's done for me is made me feel overwhelmed.
Oh.
I know I now need to start making some choices and some decisions. I'm only 44.
That's good.
And I have been working at the same company for the last 20 years.
Mm.
Put money into whatever I was supposed to because you're right, out of mind, out of sight, automatic, it's done. And I've always selected the higher risk options, just knowing that that was easier for me being young. But now what's my next step? Where should I go? What should
okay.
I do?
But that's not a bad story. So first you're going to have to tell me. So you're married, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Got some kids?
I've got two teenagers.
And how old are they?
16 and 14.
Oh, brother. Good luck to you.
I
hope you've got plenty of booze for yourselves. Okay. You've been working for 20 years, and you're putting money into a retirement plan, which is great. Do you know how much money is in the plan?
Well, between my husband and I, we have about 150.
That's great.
Honestly, I still have a couple that need to be merged. I mean, I can jobs changing over the years for him. My company originally matched money, and my company originally had a Roth, and then that stopped. And then I went to, now they allow us to take money out and put into just a regular IRA at the bank.
Okay. Okay.
But beyond that, I have no knowledge.
All right. So here's the first thing that you need to do. First of all, I think what we want you to figure out is what plans you have. So what does that mean? It means starting with gathering up all your documents. What a pain in the neck. I know. This is going to take a little work, but it's worth it. Okay. So what you want to do is gather up all your statements and you lay them out and you say, okay, what do I have? And then you want to see where everything is. Because you might have, like you said, you might have an old employer's plan, right? That's sitting around that you could just roll into your current plan. Who knows? But as much as possible, what you want to try to do is move everything into one account because that's going to make it easier for you. Okay? You don't have to. So you're going to grab all these documents And maybe what you're going to do is you're going to gather all these documents and you can call us back if you're having a problem with us. So don't worry. I'm giving you a free rein to be able to call us back. But in general, what we're trying to get people to do with their retirement accounts is not only put the actual contribution on autopilot, which sounds like you've done, but we also want to get the investing on autopilot. So it may be that some of these old plans need to be rolled into one account. It could be an account that you have, but chances are if you've got an account with a bank, it's probably kind of not doing too well in terms of return. So we may want to have you go somewhere else to consolidate these accounts. And there are plenty of places that will help you out. All right. That's most important that you need to know. So one thing to consider would be to take all these accounts and not go to a place where they're going to charge you a commission or something like that, but to go to a place where they can help you merge all this stuff together and put it to work or help you put it to work in a way that's not going to necessitate that you worry about it or do much with it. So in other words, once you created this one pool of money for you and another pool of money for your husband, that it's essentially you set it and you forget it. You don't have to really worry about it. So I'm going to give you a couple of names of places that you can try. Okay. So you ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay. So you might want to look at a place called Vanguard. Vanguard is a huge mutual fund company. And what you might want to do is you have all your statements in front of you and say, I want to consolidate all these old retirement accounts. Can you help me? They'll help you. Okay, so you can try them. The other way is that you can do it this, and if they help you do this, once they get everything consolidated, what you probably want to do is you just want to pick one fund that targets your retirement. Meaning, let's say you're 44 now. You say, I want a fund that is, we're in 2017. So I want the 2035 or the 2040 fund. Because what that would do is you just pick one fund, the money goes in, and the managers of that fund manage the fund as if you're going to retire in that year. And so that's one way to do it. The other alternative is, and I don't know how happy you are about using technology, but there's a similar approach that's all technology-based. You can go to what's called a robo-advisor. A robo-advisor. If you've listened to this show a little bit, you may not have heard them recently, but this is a company like Betterment, Wealthfront, RebalanceIRA.com, and you know what? This kind of firm may also do the exact same thing. This is a firm that's going to listen to what you got, help you consolidate it, and then move forward. So I think that we're coming up to a break. So let's do this. Let's just hang on for 1 second so that we can. I'm going to come back because I want to talk to you a little bit more about some other stuff going on in your financial life, non-investment related. And that way we'll be able to help you out a little bit more. So hang on, Jennifer from Georgia. We will be right back. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Hang on, we'll be right back with Jennifer.
Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Want to get in touch? Call or email any day, anytime, 855-411-JILL or ask Jill at jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Hey, Mark, what do you think about the other folks? They probably think this music was a little jarring if they thought we got a complaint about music on our podcast from somebody. And I was like, oh, my God, it was such mellow music. I couldn't believe it. But everyone's got an opinion. I know I do. But Jennifer, what would your theme music be if we were going to play you some theme music?
Oh, it'd have to be something relaxing. It'd have to be.
Especially when it comes to money, right?
Yeah, this is a mental overload. So something to keep it calm.
keeping you calm, relax, we're good. Here's the great news. This is why I wanted to come back with you. I didn't want to overload you too much without what going back through here. You're 44, you've got money in retirement. And that's kind of huge, right? You're already, you know, 150 grand is real money. So that's number one. Number two, you're going to work for another 20 years, which is great. Number three, the stuff that I'm going to tell you to do is almost like paperwork. I don't know what you do for a living, but sometimes like the thinking part of your job is actually not the hard part of your job. It's like the doing of these tasks. It's sort of a pain in the butt. So these are the pain in the butt tasks that you're going to be doing just to consolidate it. But once you do it, it's done. That's the beauty of it. Okay.
Well, now, one of our accounts is with Vanguard.
That's great.
You know, am I sending an email? Am I going to an office?
So here's what I would do. So, okay, so if it's at Vanguard, let's stick with Vanguard. Perfect. One of your accounts is with Vanguard. So what you're going to do is there's probably an 800 number on the statement. And again, once you have all of the other statements with you, you say to them, I already have an account with you, and I really need help consolidating what I have. I want everything to be with you, Vanguard. I love you, Vanguard. Okay, maybe don't say that. But what you want, the reason you want to do that is, again, to make it easier for you. And when you have that statement in front of you, there's probably an investment that's listed in that statement, okay? And I don't know what it is because you don't have it in front of you this second, but what I'm guessing is that, you know, there's some sort of mutual fund. And that's all you want to do. You want to just pick one or two funds that are going to keep it simple for you. So I just want you to write down a term under your Vanguard, right? And just write down target date fund, okay? And that's when I was talking about the year. A target date fund is a very simple way for you to invest because it's essentially one fund that is targeted to a specific date when you hope to retire. And you can say to the folks at Vanguard, I have an account with you, but I have all these other accounts. My husband has an account with you. He has all these other accounts. We want to consolidate as much as we can with you, Vanguard, and we just want to put it into a target date fund. That's it.
And if I forget about this in 10 years, it's still going to be an effective fund to have it in.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing is that you can set it and forget it, but you're going to have to, I mean, like once a year, I'd like you to pay attention to it. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, I want you to just pay attention. So that's the number one thing to do. We want to get you in a place where you are moving forward on track, happy with, like, you know that it's taken care of, but you don't have to do too much. And that's it.
Well, thank you. That's a great start.
All right. And if you have a problem, you'll let us know. And just be clear that, you know, you're going to do all the other good stuff in your life. Like, you tell me, we didn't do a, let me just do quickly. Do you have debt out there? Do you have a mortgage? What's going on with you guys?
Just a mortgage and a vehicle.
Okay.
No other debt.
Great. And kids, college, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking they're working.
Nice. All right. Okay. That's good. That's cool. That's cool with me. I like it. All right. Jennifer, thank you so much. Thank you for calling. We are here for you if you need us. So just give us a shout if you need any more help, all right?
Well, thank you for your time.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Oh, it's tough to get started. It really is. It really is tough. But you know what? She's doing it. So that's so awesome. Okay. Here, this is awesome also. Let's do an email here. This is someone who's been listening to the podcast for the Jill on Money show for a month. And this person, is it? All right, hold on a second. I'm from Mumbai, India. Turned 24 a few months ago. I've got monthly earning of around $400 to $450. And I don't have expenses. And I want to invest a portion of this money in a safe plan where I can get a good return. Lots of advice from people I work with, but I don't know anything about the stock market. I want to stay away from that, but I don't know if you're going to mutual funds or hedge funds. What advice would you give? Okay, no hedge funds, man. No hedge funds. What you want to do is, if you want something safe, you can just invest in a money market account, which is through a mutual fund company. And you can also invest in a CD. But I think that if you just want some safety, you can also go to a bank. It's boring, but it works. So keep it simple, okay? That's what I would say. Barry writes, I've maxed out my 401 contributions since I turned 33, and he's 56 now. I started with nothing other than my first promotion, a good job paying $39,000 a year in 1993. My income has continued to improve. I split my contributions among a bunch of different investment categories. It automatically rebalances every year. No thought or action required by me. I have never made any moves in fear, frustration, or trying to time or outsmart the market. And I ended 2016 with $1.115 million in my 401k by staying committed to contributing and staying blissfully ignorant on what to do with the daily overload of financial data. I pay attention to information, but only to be informed, not to act on it. That is so great. Putting your autopilot to work there is really helpful. And, you know, the other piece of that is that he doesn't muck around with it. And it is so important to really try to just not fall prey to your emotions. Okay? Okay. Gerald writes that he doesn't like this idea. I actually said, you know, I had written an article about putting your investing on autopilot. He says he likes to pick Morningstar fund rated, you know, highly rated Morningstar funds, and that many managed funds clearly outperform index funds. But that's baloney. They perform in so managed funds can beat an index fund in any given year, but over the long term, they don't. Okay, they do not. So no, I mean, you can go buy a highly rated Morningstar fund and then have it collapse the next year. So I'm not into that at all. Zero, my hero. I don't like that. I don't like managed funds. I think that statistically you're making a bad bet. That's why I don't use them. That's why I think you keep index funds in your portfolio, and that's what you do. Okay? So, oh, brother. I can't answer this question by this doctor at this point because we have too much. We're running out of time here on this break. All right, I'll get to the doctor's question another time. You are listening to Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, there's a number of ways to get to us. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Tweet at us @JillOnMoney. And if you miss any part of this show, just go to the website, jillonmoney.com. You can hear the show after the fact. So that's easy, too. So if you miss it or you got to go do something right now, get out of the car, don't worry. Go to JillOnMoney.com. Click on the radio tab. All right. 855-411-JILL. That's our phone number. We'll be right back.
From rookie investors to savvy veterans, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Call now, 855-411-JILL, or email askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL, or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Mark, do you actually pay for music? That do you buy music on iTunes, or do you just steal it? What do you do? And you see, bought an album on iTunes. Yeah. So someone said to me, like, oh, that's so old fashioned. that you buy an album. And I was a little upset by that because I sort of feel like, okay, come on, gang. Like, there are people who actually produce stuff. They should get paid for it. Anyway, I feel the same way. I don't have any problem paying for music. Okay, so here's what happened. I never do this, but I actually had heard music playing under somebody's, I think it was a podcast, but it may have just been a radio show. And I went and found it, and I really liked it. So, Mark, check this one out. It's called Little Big Town. Little Big Town. It's got, like, fun vibe to it. Maybe we can put some on the show. And the name of the album, and it's a very short album. The name of the album is Wanderlust. So check it out, Little Big Town. And I don't know, they seem like very cool people, two guys, two gals. It's sort of like modern country. Anyway, Pharrell Williams actually produced the album, so it's fun. It's got a good hook. Okay, so sometimes we like to give you some pop culture, ladies and gentlemen. It's not all about money. But if it is about money, give us a holler. 855-411-JILL, our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Okay. I can't even read this whole email, so I'm just going to frame it in a much bigger way. A guy named Andy wrote to me because he is 62 years old, co-signed on some debt for a grandkid, and the whole thing's exploding. Okay? Because the kid borrowed money to go to college and then didn't finish. This happens a lot. This happens a ton. And, you know, it's why there's been a lot of discussions around what federal loan programs are allowed to go through some of these some of these schools. And you've heard it maybe with a lot of the for-profit schools and certificate programs. But, of course, it happens in any institution. So let's say that you've co-signed a loan and your kid cannot pay. When you co-sign something, guys, it's yours. Like, the kid doesn't pay. It's not like, oh, they go after the kid first, then come to you. They don't even care. So it means that if before you co-sign, you must assume this will be your debt. And then can you actually pay for it? Now, here's a wild stat. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau did a big study about student loans. And I had to actually pull this whole thing up because of this question. The Americans who are 60 and older have $67 billion in student loan debt. Okay? Now, about 3/4 of that is for someone else. It's not their own debt. They have an average. Again, these people who are over 60, they have an average of $23,000 in debt. And 40% of seniors are in default, I think because they don't realize they should be paying. So I know what we have done. We have basically said, you've got to be competitive in the modern economy, kids. You've got to go get a college degree. Absolutely. But in order to do that, a lot of parents and grandparents have facilitated the college degrees, and they co-sign for these loans. But they don't realize that, you know, a lot of these kids, if they don't finish college, or even if they finish college, but they don't get a degree that can support that payment, that leaves the older generation holding the bag. And don't forget, guys, you cannot default on a federal student loan. You can't be like, oh, I'm declaring bankruptcy and the slate is wiped clean. These loans follow you for a long time. Guess what? You're going to like this, Mark. Let's say you're a senior and you're getting Social Security and you've co-signed a loan for your grandkid. Mark just like did something terrible in the studio. Something fell down. You co-signed a loan for your kid. The government can garnish a portion of your Social Security payment. That's crazy time. They can also take any tax refund you have until you pay that loan back. So this is serious stuff. And what becomes very clear as you read through this CFPB report, and even just getting this email from Andy, that I think people don't understand. They just don't understand. So there's been calls to overhaul the student loan system, to include some of these co-signers, the ability that the students themselves have of refinancing their federal student loans or going into some sort of income-based plan. It hasn't happened yet. So the best that I can say for you, Andy, is the question was, can they really garnish part of my Social Security? And the answer is yes, they can. But if you've got a private student loan, that's not happening. And if you do have a private student loan, start looking at some of the new entrants into the market and be clear that when you have this debt, whether your kid seems like the most upstanding student in the universe, you must assume this is your debt. That's my best advice. So it may not help Andy right now, but the long story short for everyone else is, please be careful before you co-sign any debt for your kids, even if it's for the greatest cause in the world. It's for college, I get it. But it's your debt, and it can really harm you in your retirement, or maybe not even harm you, but it can rob you of some of your flexibility. And I hate to see that. So careful, please. Careful on the cosigns. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Young, old, it doesn't matter. She's here to help you. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger. We're delighted that you are joining us today. And last weekend, just because it happened so quickly on the Friday before the show, we didn't get a lot of emails about this, but obviously what is on the minds of pretty much everyone out there is this, at least when it comes to the financial services. I shouldn't say everyone because maybe you don't care, but it's the Department of Labor's fiduciary rule, because just over a week ago, President Trump signed an action that would review and potentially roll back portions of Dodd-Frank regulatory reform, as well as the Department of Labor's fiduciary rule. Now, remember, that fiduciary rule was set to become implemented, the beginning parts, on April 10th. And what it was supposed to do and what it would do is force advisors and their firms who oversee, you know, almost $3 trillion in retirement savings to work in their clients' best interest. So again, this is referred to as the fiduciary duty. Now, currently, most investment professionals are held to a lesser standard. It's called suitability. That means whatever they sell you or advise you to do, it had to be appropriate, but not necessarily in your best interest. Okay, so I wrote about this a few weeks ago, saying that I thought that the Department of Labor rule was probably going to come under scrutiny and potentially get either watered down or delayed or maybe just rolled back altogether. And I got a lot of email about it. So I just thought it might make sense that we talk about that today. So here's one for the regarding the article when it was in the Denver Post. Here's a gentleman who says that the while he says, I wish that he basically saying that I had incorrect assumptions. He says, let me state, I am a licensed financial advisor, representative of two registered investment advisory firms. And so that means he's already held to the standard. And he says, here's an example of something the DOL got wrong. It has to do with pay. And the assumption is that level pay is in the client's best interest. So here's the thing about this. I just want to be clear in that there is a part of this rule that kind of shifts the focus onto pay, which I think is actually is the wrong focus. But I don't really think I agree with the writer, this guy from Denver, Steve, that it's not 100% perfect. But the reason that it's not perfect doesn't have to do with pay. Because frankly, whether you charge a commission or whether you charge asset under management fee or whether you charge just an hourly rate, you still should be doing what is in your client's best interest. And so the theory here in the pushback that you get from the industry and from brokers is that you hear, oh, you know what? This is a bad rule because it is too much focused on whether someone pays commission or not. And I think that the real important piece of this is not the like whether you pay a commission or not. It's that we have to have some standard. We have to have a standard where people are saying, I put you first. Now, look, let's say I have a big portfolio of commission-based mutual funds that are sitting in a retirement account, and I'm not trading them. Obviously, moving you to a level fee, just a plain old fee, that is that would cost you, you know, thousands of dollars a year when you've already sunk your costs and you don't need to pay for it, that, of course, would be a bad idea. But that's not putting your client's interest first. And frankly, it's sort of it's a misnomer. It doesn't have to be, best interest doesn't have to necessarily be the lowest cost option, but it should factor into it. And there are so many ways to go around fiduciary that that's the part that I think is sort of annoying to me, that like people are so nitpicky about it, but you've got tons of different exceptions and you've got ways to disclose conflicts. So I still don't understand why the whole industry is so nutty about this. It's crazy. Here's a guy who says that he just doesn't like anyone's overbearing regulations. And he says this has cost the financial industry millions of dollars with no benefits to show. Hey, look, you want to work with someone, some professional, you want to go work for it with a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant who doesn't put your interests first? Go crazy. You want to go work with an investment advisor who doesn't want to put you first? Go crazy. This is insanity to just say, because the government is talking about it, that makes it the bad thing. So I think that what we can all agree on is that most investors thought that they were getting advice or being sold products that were in their best interest. And when they haven't been, nobody really cares in the industry because, you know, it's suitable, it's good enough. Well, I just don't buy into that at all. So that's just, you know, I got a bunch of different emails about this. I got, you know, all these guys who are fiduciary people, blah, 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 blah. And they doth protest just a little bit too much. And, you know, this guy, like this dude, did you see this email from this dude, Ken, from New York, up in like wherever New York, I'm not sure where. And I went, but he's lecturing me as if I haven't been a fiduciary, that I'm not a CFP. Like, I get it, guys. I've been in the business. I know, just like you know, that 95% of folks out there giving advice, they are doing the right thing. We're just trying to put some rules in place so that the other 5% don't make the rest of the industry look like rotten apples, okay? You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd like to hear from you. Our number here is 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Again, a week or so after the new rule that was, well, it's just a week after President Trump signed an order where he was going to look at all financial regulations or instructing his folks to do so. And it looks like the fiduciary rule that the Department of Labor was going to put in place, which would force anyone dealing with retirement assets to work in their client's best interest. We got swamped with emails, lots of really positive ones and some negative, specifically from brokers. And I find there was a couple, you know, that said, oh, I don't want the government telling me what to do, except like, you know what? So why is it so hard to imagine that a highly regulated industry like financial services or the pharmaceutical industry, why shouldn't it be regulated? You know, if everyone was a perfect actor, we wouldn't need regulations, right? So it's like traffic. We wouldn't need to have anyone hand out tickets if people didn't drive drunk or actually speed. And yes, it's the minority of people out there doing these things, but we have rules in place to protect everybody. Anyway, we did get a nice note from Ed who says, I commend you on your article on fiduciary protection. Too many articles focus on products and costs and how to invest. They miss the most critical ingredient, quality of advice. In working with a financial advisor, success generally depends mostly on receiving high-quality, goal-centered advice. In my experience as a CPA and a CFP, this trumps everything else. Thank you for your article. And, you know, I guess that I feel like people really need to be clear that as we're going forward and we're looking at financial regulations, yeah, you know, you may not like the government in your stuff, but that means you better take control. And that means you got to ask how your advisor is paid and whether he or she is a fiduciary or not. Okay, that's it. That's our number one. If you have a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. Ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.